Hi, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
I find that there's not a lot of new... Well, I guess there's the Avatar movie, but there's not a lot of new movies coming out like around this time. I don't know if it's just the holidays and people are waiting for people to not be traveling or whatever, but you know, I find it's a perfect time since you're not going to go out or whatever and there's no new episodes of anything playing. It's like the perfect time to catch up on shows that you want to rewatch or trying to watch the first time or whatever. I don't know about you. I absolutely refuse to give this movie my money, not for any like moral reason or whatever. I just thought it was going to be a bad movie. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch it when it's streaming. I'm not going to spend money in 2 hours to go see it. But I saw on HBO Max recently, Black Adam. And, you know, I think I probably should have seen it in theaters. Like, it wasn't a great movie by any means. It's, I guess, what do they call it? A popcorn movie where it's like, it's not a great movie. Like, you're not going to walk away and say, oh my gosh, they deserve Oscars for this or Golden Globes or whatever. But you're like, you know, you can sit there for 2 hours. You enjoy it. You don't regret seeing it or anything. So, you know, just a popcorn movie. And I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah, I actually did see it in theaters. I enjoyed it. It was a fun watch. I would say it's the kind of one of the worst like ADR jobs I've ever seen in a movie. Whenever you see that kid talking, it's so fake. Like his sound is from a studio clearly, and they didn't try to edit it in. I have so many problems with that movie, but at the end of the day, I was like, this was just a, I got to see the Rock punch things, and I guess that's fun. Too bad it doesn't mean anything in the DC universe anymore.
Yeah. I mean, even if he did, he pretty much burnt all of his bridges with, Warner Brothers Discovery, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all this stuff with Warner Brothers Discovery, James Gunn taking over, and now Henry Cavill's out from being Superman, and Gal Gadot. Is that how you're saying her name? Gal Gadot? Gal Gadot?
I think it's Gal Gadot, but I could be wrong.
Well, she's not Wonder Woman anymore. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but I definitely say if you have HBO Max, watch Black Adam. It's fun, and if you could sit at your own couch and watch it, then you'll have a really good time.
Yeah, I it was a fine movie. There are things that definitely took me out of it that like were, I saw as plot holes, which are not a big deal. Like there was a whole portion with that one kid, the main kid that you see in the movie, where I'm thinking the whole time like, oh man, is this? Did I just walk into Terminator 2 Judgment Day? Because there's all this whole, you know, I'm not really giving away much because it's pretty early in the movie, the whole part where the kid meets Black Adam and he keeps saying, you need a superhero name and you need a catchphrase. And no, this is a bit like, it just reminded me of the whole Edward Furlong with Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator 2. Like, no, you shouldn't say affirmative. You should be you should say like okie dokie or instead of saying, you know, goodbye, say hasta la vista, you know. It just had that feeling. And also just the minor thing too is like, and I'm not giving away too much because this is also just part of the trailer and the lore of Black Adam. You know, he's been imprisoned or sealed away for 5,000 years. And he lived in like this nation called Kondok or whatever. All of a sudden he wakes up 5,000 years later with no explanation whatsoever. He's able to speak English just fine.
My other problem with this movie, now that you got me all started, is that The Rock has no accent. Like, there's no, like, everyone from Kondak, it has an accent. Is that right, Kondak? Kondak?
Yeah.
They all have accents. It's in, like, the Middle East area. And in flashbacks, not giving things away, like, there's people with accents in there. And The Rock is supposed to be one of these people. And he doesn't have an accent. I mean, like, it's such a small thing, but like, when you hear The Rock's voice, all you think of is The Rock. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't transform into this character.
I personally, and I might be alone on this, but I feel like we've been oversaturated with Dwayne Johnson over the past few years. It's like everyone wants to just throw Dwayne Johnson in whatever film they're working on. And most of them weren't like really great movies. Like some of them were enjoyable, but none of them were like, you know, Oscar worthy movies. They're popcorn movies like we described earlier.
Yeah. I just think the problem is his movies are all the same movie. Like, it's not like The Rock or Dwayne Johnson transforms into a new character or he gets lost in this role. It's all just him. Everything is just, it's him doing himself. But it all feels like, have you seen that picture? It was this meme going around where it's four different Rocks from mm-hmm. different movies. And it's like, you'd be surprised, but these are all different movies. But they kind of look all the same.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, he does play pretty, it's like, it's action movie, but like he either is like serious action, but not like serious action in the sense that it's, I don't know, it's still unbelievable action. Like, you know, the skyscraper that's on fire or the 10-point earthquake and all this random stuff, or a giant ape he's teaming up with a giant ape to fight a lizard and a wolf in the city. And, you know, all of his action films are either just weird action or action comedies. It's like the market is just flooded with Dwayne Johnson.
I think we got the peak of his ability, like what he can do. And, you know, I think we need a break. There needs to be kind of like a little rest from him. I don't think you noticed, or maybe you did notice, but that Jennifer Lawrence realized that she was oversaturating the market and then she took a break. Did you realize we had a break from Jennifer Lawrence for a while?
You know, I didn't, except for that, what was it, that hot water she got in like a week ago for that statement she made.
Oh, what'd she say? Well, wait, before that, but like, we used to have Jennifer Lawrence movies like back to back to back to back. And then now we had like nothing. And then like the one with Leonardo DiCaprio she was in, it's kind of her return. Now she's coming back. But what did she say?
Oh, yeah. She made some comments about when she was in the Hunger Games. And she talked about, I can't remember verbatim what she said, but it was something to the effect of, you know, I was really excited to get this opportunity to play the Hunger Games because they've never really cast a woman as a lead in an action movie. Oh, and like all these people responded to it on Twitter, like Sigourney Weaver, you know, they talk about like, Linda Hamilton, all these different action movies that stars that have existed well before the Hunger Games were a thing. So yeah, people naturally got a little upset when she was like, yeah, I was the first female to lead an action movie. All right, so I actually did manage to find this Jennifer Lawrence quote. Let's see. So it says she was, I guess I've never heard of the show before, but it's called like Actors on Actors, and it has Viola Davis. And she was being interviewed, and she said, I remember when I was doing Hunger Games, nobody had ever put a woman in the lead of an action movie because it wouldn't work, because we were told girls and boys can both identify with the male lead, but boys cannot identify with a female lead. I think I know what she's trying to say, that action, that women leading action movies isn't common, but the way it came out sounded like I'm a pioneer for ladies in action movies and stuff, where it's like, no, there have been plenty before you who arguably might have been better. Like her role in Hunger Games wasn't terrible by any means, but I would say like Sigourney Weaver in Alien, or Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween, and or even Linda Hamilton in Terminator. Like there's way more examples of lead action women that are better than Katniss Everdeen.
Yeah, what about Angelina Jolie in Tomb Raider?
Yeah.
Or, gosh, what's her name? Was it Zhang Ziyi in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or Michelle Yeoh?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Jennifer Lawrence. We love you on the podcast, though.
Yeah, but you were definitely not the first woman to lead an action film.
Mila Jovovich, or what's, is it Mila Jovovich in Resident Evil?
Yeah, well, like all the, yeah.
Okay, well.
It's all right, I guess it is. I mean, it was probably just a flub that she said, like she maybe didn't get her words right, but it did put her in hot water.
Oh my gosh.
Speaking back about.
I just found an article of 100 years before Jennifer Lawrence, female action movie star article. This must have made a buzz. And she said this to Viola Davis?
Yes.
Okay. I might have to go and find that.
Yeah. So, I don't know. We might not see her for a while. Who knows? Speaking back about DCU and at Black Adam and James Gunn, I have mixed feelings about it. So, it sounds like the only person who's probably going to be staying is Jason Momoa. But even if he does stay, it sounds like he's going to play a completely different character. Like, they're going to bring him back as Lobo, which I guess would also indicate that they're planning on doing some, probably a full reboot, not even a soft reboot of the DCEU, because it would be weird. I mean, granted, he'll be in a ton of makeup and stuff, but it would be weird to have a guy who played Aquaman in 4 different films and 1 TV show all of a sudden, like, not be that guy and be a completely different guy. It's like, okay, that's weird. I don't know. I think James Gunn, like, the DCEU has been super hit or miss over the past few years. The most successful DC films I can think of in the past few years weren't even in the DCEU. Like, Joker, you know, won an Oscar and everything and made $1 billion. The Batman. But in terms of DCEU films, like, most of them have been, like, either, since Wonder Woman anyway, most of them have either been all right or terrible.
Yeah, I gotta think. The first Wonder Woman movie is such a great movie. I could rewatch that. The first Aquaman is just, it's okay. Like, I've seen it a couple times. Mm-hmm. It's not like something I'm like, I have to go back and watch that. Like, I never get the urge to, like, go back and revisit that. And I guess now I don't even watch all of Wonder Woman anymore. I just watch that scene where she crosses the line, you know, in the battlefield scene. And they're shooting all the bullets at her in the first Wonder Woman. I kind of just rewatch that scene because that's like the best scene in the movie.
Yeah. Wonder Woman was a breath of fresh air because prior to that you had Man of Steel, which was all right. It wasn't great. It wasn't terrible. It was all right, in my opinion. And then, of course, you had Batman versus Superman, which was terrible. Then you had Suicide Squad, which was terrible. And so, like, DC is already kind of coming out of the gate pretty weak. And then all of a sudden Wonder Woman comes out and like, oh, yeah, this is an amazing film.
Well, you forget. You got to call it the Academy Award winning Suicide Squad movie. Because it is Academy Award winner for best hair and makeup.
Oh, well.
Technically, it is an Academy. It's the only Academy Award-winning DC movie.
Yeah, gosh, I did not know that. Now I feel a little bad.
I will say, though, the hair and makeup was very interesting. Like, those characters looked really good, so, you know, kudos to that. But DC does need a complete... It's so sad. You want it to get, like, you want these characters to do really well, and now it's like, we gotta throw you away. We gotta reboot you.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way to salvage it. Like, they just need a complete reboot. Then it also begs the question about other things. So, like, supposedly they're just going to, whatever films they have on slate now, they're going to release, and that's going to be it. So, like, what, Shazam, Fury of the Gods, Flash... the Aquaman sequel, and I think isn't there a Blue Beetle film, or wait, maybe I'm thinking of something else. But then they're also supposedly making a Peacemaker season 2, So that's squarely in the DCEU. Like, it's not like a Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something where there's like casual references here and there. It's like, you know, Viola Davis, Amanda Waller is there, and you see references to Flash and Wonder Woman. You even see Ezra Miller Flash and Jason Momoa Aquaman at the end. So it's like pretty decently tied into the DCEU. So it's like, is this going to be the final season and then they're just going to kill the show? Like, you know, I'm kind of curious where the future is going
to
be.
But then James Gunn said he wants to write a Superman movie. Like, he's going to write the next Superman movie.
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, you know, it's going to be a comedy, which doesn't necessarily mean it will be bad, but I feel like the character Superman just doesn't lead in comedies. Like, that's just not the type of, I mean, maybe it'll work. Nobody's really tried a Superman comedy before, so maybe it'll work. Who knows?
I will say I love James Gunn. Like, he's a great director and I enjoy a lot of his movies, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know. There seems to be like a taste level with his movies. Like, have you seen like Brightburn? Mm-hmm. Kind of, I felt like had problems in it. I know that wasn't, I don't think he directed it. I think that was his idea though. There just seems like, I feel like James Gunn's most successful stuff is when he has parameters, when he's kind of like boxed in and they're like, you know, here's the box, but you can kind of do whatever you want inside the box. And he kind of lets his imagination flow. I think he does his best when he has some rules. A free James Gunn is kind of like, we don't know what's going to happen. What did you think of the Suicide Squad?
I actually liked that. I thought it was better than the original. It's not like, you know, the most amazing film I ever saw, but I thought it was really good and I actually enjoyed it. And I think, and honestly, I think it was good because DC, like, pretty much said, you can do whatever you want with these characters. We don't care.
Do you think that's the problem, though? Like, you could do whatever you want with these characters. We don't care.
I think that actually helps, because I think what happens is you get these great directors who are good at what they do, but then the studio keeps getting involved saying, oh, no, we don't want too much of that, or we don't want too much of this and whatever. And it's like you kind of cripple their creative process, you know, like Sam Raimi with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Supposedly it was supposed to be even more gory and horror film-ish, but Marvel Studios essentially said for him to like pull back on it.
I mean, it still made $700 million, so.
Yeah, but I kind of wonder what, like, and maybe I'm just romanticizing it, but I feel like a Sam Raimi, like a full, if he got to go full Sam Raimi on the film, it would have been even better. Not that it was a bad film. There were things that disappointed me about it. I think it would have been even better if they just let him go full Raimi.
Oh, wait, it made $955 million. So close to a billion.
I think that's why Thor Ragnarok was so popular, to be honest. So I think Marvel always thought, like, Thor, you know, the big three of the first three phases were Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor. And so I think Marvel really, really wanted to control Thor and the narrative around him and stuff. And after the first film was mediocre, the second film was often least, I mean, until Eternals came out, was listed as the least favorite Marvel film of most people. So I think at that point, Marvel was just like, whatever, we can't make it any worse. Just Taika, you do you on this film. And he wound up being great. But then Taika started doing too much of him on Love and Thunder.
See, I think it's the opposite. I think Ragnarok, they were like, Taika, we want you to like put your Taika dust. Like, which season this with Taika Waititi on it? Like, we want the flavor. And then it did so good. They were like, okay, the next one, do what you want to do. We set you free. And then we got Love and Thunder.
Yeah, who knows? I wonder what it would be like if Hank directed one of these movies. Maybe he can help direct the new Superman. It'd be a Superman who can build stuff with his, like, you know, what was it in the, what was in the fourth movie where he had, like, because they didn't have budget to actually explain it in a succinct way. They didn't have a budget to do that. So instead they just gave him like this powers where he just stared at the Great Wall of China and it repaired itself. Good times. Yeah, that'd be super. That was a Hank Hill thing. He wrote that into the script. Now we're going to talk about our episode 42, Lupe's Revenge, which is season 6, episode 3. This is a Peggy heavy episode. again, we always say it's one of our favorites. This is one of my favorites because this is like one of the ones that really leans heavy into how terrible Peggy is in Spanish. Like, it's one of those running gags throughout the entire show, but this episode like really brings it to light. We start the episode in Spanish class, and the class just lets out, and you know, she tells the kids, hey, do some extra credit. And then the Dooley, you know, Dooley being Dooley, is like, you're just a sub. You can't give extra credit. And he's like, that's right. But these Peggy points you collect will add up. Chairman Geiger, who is the department head of, I guess, the language department, comes up to Peggy and says, hey, we need you to sub tomorrow. The teacher's still out. We also need you to take over the Spanish club. And she's like, the Spanish club? They're supposed to go to a field trip to Mexico tomorrow. And Geiger's like, I didn't become head of a department overseeing three people by giving substitutes the ability to take kids out of the city. And, you know, Peggy stands her ground and says, you know, hey, this would be a great learning opportunity, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, well, the bus is non-refundable. And she's like, you know, you can come too. It'll be great. And he's like, all right, cool. And it's like, yes, you'll notice this is one of the rare instances where the sub is more dependable than the regular teacher, who I suspect is an alcoholic.
I love that Peggy throws that dig in. Also, I don't know if I remember it correctly, but when I was in high school, if the club teacher didn't show up that day, we just canceled the club meeting that day. Like, the substitute wouldn't run it.
My guess, I don't know. I mean, obviously it's to help make the story work, but I don't know. I think that, I mean, you do have a good point. That usually does not happen. Usually you just cancel the club. But my guess is maybe, I don't know. My guess is maybe the club somehow ties into the normal class, and that's why she's overseeing the club. That's the only guess I have.
Very true. And this would have happened during the day, right? Like, they would have missed normal class to go to Mexico.
Yeah.
But, well, I support Peggy. Team Peggy all the way at this moment.
Mm-hmm. At the house, they're, I guess, celebrating Taco Tuesday. Because this is one of the few times I think we've ever seen them making tacos for dinner. With, like, just making tacos. Like, it's not part of Cinco de Mayo or something like that. They're just... it's their normal dinner. Hank's like, hey, instead of going to Mexico, why don't you borrow my sombrero and teach the kids how to talk? And Peggy's like, Hank, why don't you want me to go to Mexico? Is it because of the exchange rate? And Hank's like, oh, no, I don't want you to go because, you know, the Spanish they speak in Mexico is proficient. It's very good. And Peggy's like, oh, you think I can't speak Spanish? Well, you know what? While I'm there, I might tutor some Mexican kids in Spanish.
I love that Hank's idea of, like, he was like, you can borrow my sombrero and teach him, like, uno, dos, tres, like, the first 10 numbers in Spanish.
Yep.
Oh, man. And so there was a point where I used to believe that Hank and, like, some, like, other people thought that Peggy was good in Spanish, like, decent Spanish. But now, like, after watching this episode, I'm like, oh, they humor her in this.
Well, it's funny because, you know, Hank doesn't know Spanish. Like, it's indicated many times in the episode that, or in not this episode, but in the series, that he has a very basic working level of Spanish. Like, he couldn't hold an actual conversation, but he knows how to, like, order beer or something. So it's funny, he doesn't know Spanish, but he has enough knowledge to know that Peggy really doesn't know Spanish. At the school, Peggy is talking to Bobby. It's like, you know, I need one unified voice to convince Geiger that, you know, I did a great job and everything. And she slips a note of talking points to Bobby. And Bobby goes for it, and his bag opens up, and the Spanish dictionary falls out. And Peggy's friend's like, why do you have this? Like, oh, Dad thought I might need one of these dictionaries. Like, your mom's a Spanish dictionary. If you ever marry a Spanish She's like, if you ever marry a Spanish teacher, and you will, never doubt her gifts. And she throws away the dictionary in a nearby garbage can. Geiger gives Peggy the itinerary for the trip that the other teacher had already created. And she's like, huh, I wonder if there's a tequila factory on here. So she's still throwing shade at the other teacher.
And she didn't even look at the itinerary. Like, what was supposed to be on it. She kind of just dismisses it real quick. And that dictionary was really big, though, by the way. The one that Hank gives Bobby, it was like a regular, not even a travel dictionary. It was just like a full Spanish to, or English to Spanish dictionary.
Yeah, they were only going to be there for a few hours, which also, well, I guess they went to Nuevo Laredo. Now I need to like sit and actually do the math, because I'm like, that's not a quick drive, but maybe I think they're in the Dallas area. Wouldn't that be an 8-hour drive just to get there?
Yeah, because it takes them about like 2 hours or ish to get to Dallas.
Yeah. So even if they're like 2 hours south, that's still like 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah, it would take me about, and I live in Austin area, so it would take me about a few hours to get to a border.
Yeah.
Well.
I mean, I start banking on the fact that not too many people are thinking as deeply about it as we are. Hank's driving his truck, and he's looking at his odometer, and it's at 999, so it's about to flip over, and he's all excited. He's like, oh, I wish Peggy was here to see this. And he's staring at his odometer, so he's not paying attention to the road. And he swerves into oncoming traffic and swerves back, and he passes a cop on the way, and the cop, you know, pulls him over because he was driving recklessly, and Hank's upset. He's like, oh, dang it. And then he looks at the odometer and sees that it's turned over already. And he's like, dang it. So he's madder at missing that than he is of the cop pulling him over. Hank pulls over. He gets out of his car, which I find funny. He actually gets out of his car and hands over his license and registration to the cop, who is a female cop. It does play into the story. And Hank's like, you know, my driver's license says I'm 190, but I'm actually 197. I've been hoping to get back to my playing weight, but, you know, they start having a conversation. It's like, oh, you play? It's like, yeah, I played high school football. It's like, oh, I might have seen you on the field. I used to be a cheerleader for Rumpert. It's like, oh, you're too young to have seen me play. And she's like, really? And then she kind of goes into one of her cheers and she's like, yeah, I can still do stuff. I'm just not as flexible as I once was. And Hank's like, oh, I'm sure you're plenty flexible. And she thinks Hank's flirting with her, but he is, you know, he's not. He's just having a conversation. And also, Hank probably just doesn't even understand what flirting is. She lets him off with a warning, tears up the ticket, and he's like, oh, don't worry, I won't speed anymore. Not because it's cool, but because it's the right thing to do. It is kind of funny because, like, from our perspective, it's clear that the cop is into Hank. But she, like, he's just oblivious and doesn't realize that there's flirting going on. He just thinks, oh, we're having a normal conversation.
So Hank is worried about the weight, right, on his driver's license? Like, that's why he was freaking out?
No, he notices it. Like, I think he was freaking out because he doesn't want to be pulled over. Nobody wants to be pulled over. And then I think he, in his way, because, like, obviously, in real life, the cop wouldn't care, like, hey, your license says you're 190, but really you're 200 pounds. This is illegal. Like, but in Hank's mindset, it's like, oh man, this is an official document and it's not accurate, so I must let the cop know.
Oh, because I thought he was freaking out because of that. Because you see him start, like, the sirens go off, and then he's like, he does like a like that, and then he's like, oh, because, like, he realizes something else. So I thought, like, maybe his registration was expired or something like that.
No, the second one was that he was upset because he missed the odometer turning over.
Okay, I missed that then. I love the cop does the cheer, though. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, very casual cop, I guess. Well, also having a crush on Hank probably doesn't hurt.
Also, remember when we had that episode where they were, like, rating the guys on the street? Mm-hmm. And then Hank was, like, at the, like, next to Bill?
Yeah.
You know what? This stranger cop lady is attracted to Hank. So I feel like, you know, they got it wrong.
Yeah, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
At least above Dale. We got to move above Dale.
Yeah. On the Mexico trip, they're on the school bus, and Bobby gets up, and he's reading from, like, his note card saying that they're honored to have Peggy Hill, you know, leading this trip, and nobody on the bus cares about what Bobby has to say. Peggy's like, thank you very much, but now we're only going to speak the language of the nation. And the bus driver is like, okay, so where am I supposed to turn? And it's like, oh, you need to speak Spanish. And he's like, I don't know any other languages. And she tries to teach him left and right. And it's like, okay, so do I turn this way or that way? And Peggy's like, take a right. In the alley, they're talking, and about the cop, and Hank's like, yeah, so this cop was a cheerleader at Rumpert, and it's like, wait, I thought you said it was a cop, and he's like, oh, it's one of those lady cops, and he's like, oh, must have been embarrassing to take a beating from a lady cop. It's like, there was no beating. We talked football, and she ripped up the ticket, and that was it. And then they're like, oh, this is a love story, and you were flirting. And he's like, I was not flirting. I didn't even mention that I worked at Propane. And Bill's like, did you mention you have a wife? And he's like, no. Let's join Peggy back in Mexico. Back in Mexico, they are lost and nowhere near the museum that they're supposed to go to. I think it's one of those things where Peggy's trying to save face, and she's like, oh, I want my students to see the real Mexico. You know, this is Peggy Hill. This is a Peggy Hill field trip. And then she tells the bus driver to stop for a minute so that she can get her bearings. When they stop, I guess this guy who has a chicken gets on the bus thinking it's just like a city bus, not the school bus. They just happen to stop where there's a city bus. And, you know, he gets on and they're like, oh, well, here we go. We'll just follow him and see the day in the life of an average Mexican. And they talk to him and it's like, where are you going? He's like, oh, you know, he's in Spanish. He says he's going to his carniceria, which is butcher shop. But Peggy's like, oh, we're going to his carnival. They go to the place and they get off, and it's a small, like dingy little butcher shop, and with live animals and cages and stuff. And Peggy's like, oh, you know, this is a petting zoo. And they take all the animals out of the cage, and like one animal's riding on a pig, and she's giving chickens to them. And all of a sudden the guy comes out and he's really upset, and you know, he gets ready to kill a chicken, but Peggy's like, oh, he's inviting us to see a show. And they go up and he cuts off the head of the chicken, and all the kids are like terrorized. And Peggy's like, oh, this is my favorite Mexican magic trick. And I am the lovely assistant, and I'll help him complete it. And she gets like in front and kind of blocks the view. And she removes the chicken from underneath the sheet and grabs the chicken from the cage. Like, and voila, the chicken's back alive, and all the kids are happy and applauding. And then he proceeds to chop off the other chicken's head.
I don't know how to describe it, but like Peggy just walks in and just like starts handing out these chickens. No one's questioning it. There was like, I don't know. And then she hands one to Geiger, and he's like, I guess he seemed excited to hold a chicken. He was like, oh, I can hold it for a little bit. I don't know. Peggy definitely, she's not, I don't know. I don't want to say she's not the brightest, but she definitely can think on her toes. Like, she's definitely like, okay, I'm in this, I got myself in this situation, and how do I turn it around to like, so everything comes up Peggy.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Because she's really, I think she's trying to get a permanent job as a teacher. And with this, with Geiger around, who is like the department chair, if she doesn't make a good impression on him, then it's pretty much game over for her. So she is like trying her best to save face to make it look like, oh no, this was all planned. I'm not just making this up as I go. Hank goes back to where the cop is. I guess this is like the cop's normal beat. She hangs out behind this sign and goes after speeders. And Hank says, you know, I've come back because I want more than just a slap on the wrist. And, you know, he asks for the ticket because I guess in his mind it's like, oh, you know, if I get the actual ticket, then that means that I wasn't flirting and I've turned her down and they're all as well as in the world. The woman gets like a call on her radio, and she's like, oh, I'm not in the mood for possible arson. And she's like, I guess this is what you want. She gives him a ticket and drives off. And when Hank looks at the ticket, it's just her phone number and a call me on it. In Mexico, as everybody's getting back on the bus and this trip is over, Geiger's like, oh, the concept of students smiling is foreign to me. I think Bobby was right when they said that they would be lucky to have Peggy Hill as a permanent member of the Spanish department. And she's like, oh, he said that. And then Dooley comes up and he's like, I drank the water. And Peggy's like, oh, in Espanol. And then he says, you're a pig in Spanish. But she thinks, oh, very good. There's a little girl selling chiclets. Peggy thinks it's one of the students, and she's like, yo vivo in Mexico. And he's like, yes, yes, we all love Mexico, but it's time to go home. And puts her in the bus and drives away. They get back to the school. All the kids are going back into their, you know, getting their cars, being taken by their parents. And then Peggy and Bobby realize that this girl stares like, great, first she wouldn't get on the bus, and now she won't go home. Where are your parents? Yo vivo en Mexico. Yes, yes, long live Mexico. But where are your parents? Yo vivo en Mexico. And then Peggy, like, looks at her her Mexico flag shirt and, like, her garb and everything, and she puts two and two together and realizes, oh, no, this isn't one of the students. This is just some random kid I picked up from Mexico and brought into the States.
I love that part where it's just, like, she sees the Mexico shirt. Like, it's the shirt with the Mexico flag on it. Then she looks at the gum. And then the final piece is she sees this girl's wearing sandals. And she's like, oh, no. Uh-huh. I don't know. I feel like, yeah, she's like, oh, no, I've kidnapped a child. I don't know if it hits her exactly that moment that she did kidnap a child. Or is she just like, I know she's worried about her job, but I think mm-hmm. it's hilarious that the sandals were like that final straw for her.
Maybe kids at Arlen High don't do sandals. Or at Arlen Middle School, what's it called? Tom Landry Middle School. We're back at the alley. The policewoman drives by and Dale's like, great, you've turned the alley into a police state. And the police officer comes out. It's like, I'm going to arrest you for public drunkenness. And they're like, oh, but we're not drunk. It's like, yeah, you want to spend all day in the courthouse proving it? And scares all the guys away except for Hank. And Hank's like, oh, I have a wife and she's going to be home soon. Oh, what route is she taking? I can set up a roadblock. And Hank's like, oh, no, thanks. And he runs back home and she looks over the fence and looks at Hank's non-butt and it's like, oh, I'll take a burger with that shake.
I mean, you like you said, was it different strokes for different folks, I guess. Mm-hmm. I also like when she pokes Bill. What'd she call him, like Tubby or something like that?
Yeah, I think something to that effect, yeah.
And I love when he's like, we're not drunk yet.
Pretty much, yeah. It was funny because she obviously just wanted to get rid of the guy so she could be alone with Hank. At home, Peggy tries to hide Lupe, the girl, in like her little office area. And she picks up her phone and is like, okay, call your parents. And, you know, the girl doesn't speak English, so she's saying everything in Spanish. And she's saying that her family doesn't have a phone. And Peggy's like, oh, it's worse than I thought. She thinks that her family hates her. And so Peggy like tries to say, oh, your mother doesn't hate you. She loves you very much. But she tries to say it in Spanish. And the girl's like, I have no idea what you're saying, but it better not be bad about my mother. And then Peggy is like, oh, it's even worse. She wishes I was her mother. Well, I'll hide her here until the morning, and then I'll take her in Mexico before anybody knows anything. And they go to the kitchen to make food for Lupe. And then they see the lady cop drive by. And Peggy's like, oh, no, it's the cops. Bobby, did you rat me out? How much did they give you? Peggy's on edge. It's obvious. Hank walks up to the door and notices Lady Bird scratching at it. It's like, oh, did you leave a bone or a ball in there? It's like, oh, a ball. It's just like looking at Lady Bird's face. Opens the door, sees the little Mexican girl, Lupe, in the utility closet. And closes the door and goes to Peggy. And it's like, why is there a little Mexican girl in our class? It's like, oh, it must be one of Bobby's friends. And then Peggy confesses to having brought back an extra kid. And Hank wants to call the authorities. And it's like, oh, what are they going to do that I can't do? I'm just going to drive her back in the morning to Mexico and leave her. And Hank's like, I think you ran over your head. And Peggy's like, I brought her over the border without even trying. What do you think I could do with when I put my mind to it? Oh, man. I feel for Peggy. Like, I think she would have been in way less trouble had she just, like, owned up to it and said, look, an extra kid got into our bus. We need to take her back to Mexico or whatever.
Okay. Do you think Peggy, I don't know, she's so confident, though, that she thinks she doesn't know Spanish? Like, the only reason to not, well, like, does she think she, first, do you think she thinks she's going to get in bigger trouble by calling the police?
I think she'll think she'll get in bigger trouble because I think she wants to contain it. And, like, if she can make it go away with, like, the minimal amount of people finding out, then she feels like she'll be in the best situation.
Okay, because I was thinking that, but then the other option is that she has to admit her Spanish isn't that good. But I don't think she believes that.
No, I just think if, like, it goes out that she screwed up the field, ultimately it boils down to her screwing up the field trip. If she screwed up the field trip, then, you know, it will ruin her career. So she's like, yeah, if I get the cops involved, then this will go public. So I need to keep this under wraps, I think is her mindset. the TV show, I forget what they call it, but they're watching it. It's the, we see it often in the show, the with the Catholic priest who's also like a secret agent. He's like, Vaya con Dios. And Hank asks Lupe, hey, is this show accurate? Then Peggy's like, you're having her out in the open? Either close the blinds or put on a wig. Oh, that policewoman is here. Hank, I need a distraction. Ram into her car or get in a high-speed chase. Well, instead, Hank agrees to be a distraction, but he goes up to the cop just to talk cars and stuff. It's like, oh, so what kind of car is this? Is it a Caprice or a Crown Victoria? It's like, it's a Crown Vic. It's like, oh. So the siren, is it like a button or a toggle switch? She's like, it's a toggle switch. And while this is all happening, Peggy's like slipping Lupe into the car and getting ready to drive off and stuff. It's like, you know, in Greek mythology, sirens were people whose voices were so beautiful that they would cause people to crash their boats into the rocks. Isn't that romantic? And then Hank's like, actually, that sounds pretty irresponsible. And he just leaves. The cop sees Peggy and goes after her and pulls her over. And makes her get out of the car and says, okay, turn around and spread them. And when she does, the cop's like, huh, not bad, but take a look at this. And then she goes and shows like her butt to Peggy and stuff. And it's like, okay, now you get out of here. And Peggy's like, oh, Peggy Hill, you're one cool customer. It's like the cop just wanted to, I guess, her own ego, make her think that she was better than Peggy by looking and saying like, oh, I've definitely got a better body. I can get Hank.
You know, I don't blame Peggy for not understanding what's going on. She doesn't have the context of, like, she thinks the cop's there to, like, get her, not that she's been flirting with Hank. So I guess this whole scene doesn't make sense. But also, I don't know, I guess Peggy's totally different. But if it was me, I'd be like, what just happened? Like, this cop just kind of was like, look at my butt now.
I think Peggy is just so worried about what's going on that she's just not even paying attention. She's just like, and then also her ego. So she's just like, oh, I beat the cop. I beat the game. Back in Mexico, Peggy drops off Lupe and the family's excited to see her. The neighborhood's excited to see her. And, you know, old grandma comes out and, you know, kneels and prays and stuff, but Peggy thinks, oh, they're praying to her and they all see her as a hero, but in reality they're mad and Lupe identifies Peggy as a kidnapper and they're all yelling and stuff, and Peggy's like, oh, please, please don't praise me, it's great, you know, just thank me for doing this, but I don't need the praise. And all of a sudden the cops show up and arrest her and they say they're going to take her to the commandant, but she's like, oh, I'm getting a commendation, this is amazing. She's taken to the police station, and of course, you know, it's a Mexican police station in Mexico, so they're speaking Spanish. So the officer asks if she understands Espanol, and she says, sure. And he says something to the effect of, I hope that you get thrown in prison and your eyes get eaten by the rats and stuff. And Peggy's like, oh, thank you, thank you. Can I call home? And so the officer gives her a call, and she calls home, and it's like, oh, they're praising me, and I'm going to meet the mayor. Can you get me Geiger's number so I can make a three-way call for when I meet the mayor? And Hank goes like, okay, cool, I'll look for your address book. And he puts the phone down, and over the phone you can hear that she's being arrested and taken into custody, and she's screaming for help. And when Hank comes back, she's like, I'm being arrested, I need help. Oh, gosh, it's so funny that, like, I feel for Peggy because she, like, when she finally has that moment of realization that, oh, crap, this is not good. But then this whole time she's like, oh, like, I guess it also shows how terrible her Spanish is because nobody said anything positive to her, but she's still like, oh, well, thank you. Oh, they're praising me. Oh, gosh, this is great.
So I've never thought about it until, like, this last watch. How aggravated do you think that the Mexico police officer is? Like, he's like telling her these things. You're telling this person these things. And then her response is like, aha, thank you. Or like, you know, just like this gratitude face where you're like, you're going to jail. Or like, you're going to be arrested. And I hope that rats eat out your eyes. And she's just like, thank you. He must be so angry.
Oh, absolutely. He's angry. And he probably also is using this as like evidence. Like, oh, she's not sorry for what she did. She's proud of what she did. So she is definitely a criminal.
I do like that everything switches. As soon as Hank puts the phone down everything switches in that moment.
Yeah, I think once she saw the police starting to arrest her, that's when she had the realization that something was not right. But yeah, so Hank's coming to the rescue. So he drives, he's speeding, he passes by that sign where the cop is hanging out, and cop pulls him over, and he's like, oh, great. He's like, he pulls over, and he's like, yes, I know I was speeding, just give me a ticket. And he's like, I need to go save my wife. She's like, I don't know what it is. First you're leading me on, and then all of a sudden you're talking about your wife. He's like, I never wanted to leave my wife. You know, he's like, just give me the ticket, and I got to go. And he's like, hey, what about those 7 extra pounds you're holding? How do I know it's not a gun or something? And Hank's like, no, it's just extra fat. He's like, well, I'm going to have to frisk you. And he's like, I do not feel comfortable with that. And she's like, okay, well, then I'll have to take you in. And so Hank reluctantly agrees to be frisked. And he sings those Say You Can See to, like, kind of, I guess, take his mind off of it as he's being touched by the woman. And she even, like at first the frisking is, I guess, semi-professional or whatever. But then she just, like, grabs his butt. So it's clear that it's not. And it makes Hank upset. But she's like, you're clean. You can go. And Hank gets in the car and he's like, oh, I feel so dirty. But then she feels sad.
I mean, was it ever professional, this frisking?
No.
I don't know. I feel so bad for Hank.
I mean, it's funny because, like, that's enough for her to get a sexual harassment claim against her. But at the same time, I honestly don't think Hank would bring it up because he wouldn't want to be the guy who complained about being sexually harassed by a cop, so he'd probably just let it go.
Though, I mean, I get, you know, it's not a great situation what she did, but in the scheme of things, Hank's got to get to Mexico real quickly, so I don't even think she wrote him a ticket.
Nope.
So I guess this is, like, the best outcome he could have had for this situation, and you know what? It's all, like, said and done, and I don't think we ever encounter her again, so maybe she did get disciplined. Yeah. Maybe, like, she got fired from the force. We never see her again, so we don't know what happens.
Yeah, I guess I think she is a one-off a character. Maybe she shows up in the background of another episode or something, but I think you're right. We don't see her ever again. So we're at the Mexican courthouse, and they're starting to have a evidentiary hearing to see if there's enough evidence to go to trial. Peggy has what I assume is a court-appointed lawyer. And this is, man, super fast, how quickly this is all happening. But anyway, they're like, oh, you know, if they decide that there's going to be a trial, you'll be held in a Mexican prison anywhere from 1.5 to 6 years. The lawyer's like, you know, don't worry, I will show that this was all an accident. Hank shows up, and I guess you could think that it's kind of funny because I guess he doesn't see the Mexican court system as a real court system or whatever, because he's like, all right, Peggy, get your stuff, we're going. And the lawyer's like, oh, these charges are very serious, but don't worry, I have a plan. I'm going to tell the judge that your wife's Spanish is so bad, there is no way she could have ordered Lupe into the bus, much less kidnap her. Peggy is upset by this because she's like, if it goes into the Mexican record that I can't speak Spanish, it's going to ruin my career. Listen to me roll my R's. It's so perfect. It's funny because at the end of this, the lawyer, the prosecution is saying something, and then Peggy's like, see, he's saying that we all have to sit here while this guy buys a hat. Hank has an idea, brilliant idea. He says, I agree with my wife. I think she can speak Spanish. In fact, you should put her on the stand. And the lawyer's like, what? Are you crazy? And he's like, so she can tell her story in her own words, her own Spanish words. And the lawyer's like, ah, I see. So it's like, he goes up and he's like, okay, I want to call my witness to the stand. And he keeps calling Peggy Hill, and Peggy's not listening because she doesn't understand Spanish. And Hank's like, I think you should go up. It's like, you're right. If I don't go up, he's going to just keep talking forever. Peggy sits down and tells the story. And I transcribed it as best as I could. She says, I could tell you are a reasonable horse. I am very pregnant because of what happened to Lupe. She ate my bus accident, and all I wanted was to make Lupe a book. I have many good anuses ahead of me to spend in a cigar factory. So, yeah, she pretty much proves on the stand that she cannot speak. Either she's an idiot or she can't speak Spanish. So, ultimately, Peggy is told to rise. She's found not guilty, but again, she doesn't understand Spanish. So, she's like, oh, God, I'm going to jail. And then the lawyer's like, oh, no, you're not guilty. And she's like, oh, good. And she's like, see, I told you, Hank, I had this all under control. And the episode ends.
There's a lot of problems, like, just, I don't know, with the episode, just the cop harassing Hank and Peggy kidnapping a child. But I love this ending so much. This, when Peggy goes up on the stand and then she says, like, all that stuff. And you see all, like, the people in, like, the courthouse. Like, they're angry and then they're just, like, confused faces.
Yeah.
Oh, this episode is just so hilarious. Like, it's so funny. I will say probably again at the end of this episode, but this is like one of my favorite, maybe one of the best King of the Hill episodes. Definitely top 10 for me.
I like that it's always been a running gag up to this point that she's bad at Spanish. And this is like the first time they like actually confirm it and acknowledge like everybody knows she's terrible at Spanish, but she still thinks she's great.
Yeah, this is like, but they've been to Mexico before, I believe. I don't know, but this one is just like, takes the cake or whatever the saying is. Is that the saying? Takes the cake, tops the cake, something cake of this is Peggy speaking Spanish at the end and having to defend herself is just so great. And then you get to see, read the translation on the bottom and it's hilarious. Like one of the words is anus and she wants to turn Lupe into a book. It's so... Oh, man. What a great, great gift this episode gave us.
Mm-hmm. That's the best part of it, is that she is just... And what's funny is probably in her head, she thinks that she did a great job. Like, she saved her own butt and kept her out of jail. I guarantee you that's what happened in her mind.
Yeah, that... Oh, I also love when the judge gives the verdict... And she's like, oh my God, I'm going to jail. I'm going to be in jail forever. And he's like, no, you're not guilty. You're free. She's like, yeah, that's what I thought.
See, Hank, I got it all under control. Yeah. Yes. Peggy's got a big ego. But I also think a part of it's probably just because she's in small town Texas. My guess is their education system isn't the greatest. And, you know, she doesn't substitute all that often. So my thought is they're like, okay, you know what? If she just fills in for a day or two, she is not going to, you know, it's not going to hurt the kids. So
I don't know. Sometimes I do think Peggy does more harm than good.
Yeah, well, because there's always the part of me that's like, how does she have this job if she doesn't even know how to speak Spanish? But I'm thinking like, maybe they're like, oh, she can fill in for a day. Because I've had teachers where I remember being in high school when you'd have a sub, and it'd almost be a free day. Like you just catch up on like whatever homework or whatever lesson plan they had, or you watched a movie or something. It was never like, oh, you're gonna do a lot of actual work.
Yeah, it was kind of just like the teacher left a lesson plan, and you got to kind of do these like problems or like sheets, or like there was a quiz that just had to be done or whatnot. There wasn't any actual teaching involved in that day.
Yeah, it was almost like a free day, or it was like a 50. It was like everybody was operating at half capacity or something. So, you know, that's probably the reality of the situation of Peggy when she's doing her teaching. But at the same time, like with her ego, she probably thinks, oh, man, I'm such a great Spanish teacher. But then she can't figure out why they won't make her an actual Spanish teacher. And she's always just a sub.
Yeah, because for a while, her goal was to really be like a regular teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It is very true. And I mean, at some point, she gives up on it. Like we've said in this episode and other episodes, there's like a point in the series where she just isn't a teacher anymore. And they don't even really have a cutover where she like gives up teaching or she's fired or anything like that. It's just like, it just, she's not a teacher anymore. She moves on to being a journalist. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's best for Tom Landry Middle School.
It's probably best for everybody. Better education. But yeah, that, I love this episode, and that's all I have on it. What about you?
Yeah, I love this episode too. It's kind of It's sometimes I don't realize what episode we're doing, like, until I go in to see what episode I need to watch. And then this one came up. And anytime I talk to any of my friends about, like, the podcast or King of the Hill, people remember this episode in pieces. Like, they always remember how bad Peggy's in Spanish and that she kidnapped a child. Because I was talking to someone yesterday, and he was like, oh, one of my favorite episodes is where, like, Peggy's on trial and she has to speak Spanish. And I'm like, oh, I know that episode. And, like, I'm doing it soon. So, I like I said, this is worth the rewatch. But you're going to want to rewatch this, like, over and over again throughout the year. It's just, you're going to laugh so hard. You're going to laugh out loud all the time. Every time you watch it.
Mm-hmm. 100%. I would recommend it. Let's see. Next week, we are doing Reborn to Be Wild. This is a mid-series episode. Not quite early, but not quite late. It is actually a really funny one. Bobby Heavy and Bobby gets involved in one of those, like, cool youth pastor type churches. It's a great watch. So we look forward to talking to you about that. And if we, you know, we know we have a bunch of holidays coming up. So we here at That's My Purse, we'll wish you a very happy holiday season. And until then, I am Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.